obviously.
Natalie, what's the success rate of tubal reversal?
That's a good question. It really does depend upon the type of tubal ligation in the past, also the age of the patient. We know that the more fallopian tube that is destroyed or damaged during the original procedure, the lower the chance that the subsequent procedure to try to repair the fallopian tube is going to be successful.
This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Something that is absolutely life-changing.
One of the things that I really see is the couples that come to see us have generally been fairly successful in life. Mm-hmm. And they've gone to school, college, have a good job, and the harder they worked at it, the more successful they were.
Absolutely.
And is it the opposite in infertility?
That's right.
Just like
it's like hitting
more
the wall.
And more frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. And that, what you just described, is something we talk about. I talk about probably every week. I have couples that come in, and that's exactly a real big realization that this is sometimes the first time in their life they've been faced with something they can't just, you know, find a path to and quickly get to a result.
And I think it's a good message to couples, too, that if they've been sexually active for 6 to 12 months and they haven't become pregnant, probably working at it harder is not going to help.
Exactly.
They really do need to seek help. And that's from us to try to figure out what the problem is. And if there's an inordinate amount of stress, then I think that they need to see you.
Well,
I mean, I think that's really helpful. I think it's a great team approach.
I think it is, too. And I think that the couples that I see, absolutely, I think they benefit to have more of a holistic, you know, when they're using multiple kinds of practitioners and they feel a little bit more in control, that they've got a plan, they've got things to do. When they leave your office and they can't do anything for a few days or a few weeks, it's nice to have other things, people to talk to and other things that they can do to feel like they're, you know, doing something productive to help themselves and their health.
You know, Val, it's interesting because when couples think about illness and they think about fertility, I mean, fertility is not a real common illness. It's not like diabetes. It's not like high blood pressure. It's different. I mean, it is an illness. It is a disease, we believe, and it's just a different kind of disease. But when people think about having a condition that they need treatment for, when you hear the word therapy, sometimes people, I think there's a connotation that, oh my God, I'm signing up for years and years of going in and laying on a couch and, you know, talking about my childhood and talking about who was mean to me in third grade.
Right.
And, you know, going from there. What's it really like?
You know, well, I do have a couch, but it's not really like a leather couch. I don't have a long beard and I don't sit behind you at your head while you're laying down.
Are you like the drill sergeant, the Geico commercial that
right.
just like screams at the guy? And
no. You know, it's a conversation is really what it is. It's a, you know, hopefully there's a warm environment where you come in and you feel like you have a very confidential place to talk about anything honestly that's on your mind and in your heart. And, you know, and I say, how many times in life can you find one person who's going to sit there and listen to you for an hour and not make it anything about their agenda, but it's just absolutely all about you? And I think the relief that people feel, and one of the first questions I ask is, have you ever done this before? Because I think that there is a lot of preconceived idea of, you know, having your childhood picked apart or being diagnosed the first time or having medicine shoved down your throat. And it's not like that at all. It's really just a very, I guess the way that I approach it is you're the expert on you and I'm here to facilitate a process to help you get to wherever you want to go. And I've got some ideas and tools and can certainly give you the feedback. But, you know, we're going to work with where you are. And I, you know, count on you to tell me a lot about you. And
I love that. You're
there.
The expert on you. I mean,
yeah,
that's really cool.
What, and don't you think just the talking's somewhat therapeutic itself?
Oh, there isn't any question. You know, I mean, sometimes I tell people that, you know, you'll potentially walk out feeling worse before you feel better. And most of the time they walk out feeling better. But, you know, once you sort of open that floodgate, I don't know if you've ever had a really good cry or a really good cathartic session with somebody that you care about. But
no, every time we get a check from Blue Cross Blue Shield, we have a really good cry.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody you cared about.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, it's kind of interesting. This is off on tangent a little bit, but I would talk to patients about all their friends want to tell them how to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And have all this advice. It never works. And so my advice to those people is just listen.
Absolutely.
Let's not give advice. If you know a couple struggling, just say, hey, I'm here. If you want to talk, fine. And that's it. So the listening is just so important.
It's so important, and no one can really know what it's like to go through an experience like this. And I think it's so easy for someone who's either been pregnant or even if they haven't been pregnant to think that they know, you know, just to relax and it'll happen, or just go on vacation, or, you know, just it's God's will, or, you know, whatever the feedback is. Most people are trying to be helpful, but it's really become more complicated right. than that.
And I have to say that's the number one thing I think we should not say as physicians. Go home and relax.
Yeah.
Right. Counterproductive.
So you're absolutely right. The listening is the key. And sometimes just saying, you know, it sounds like you're having a really hard time, and if there's anything I can do, I'm here for you.
Well, Val, we know that this is a topic that's going to spark a lot of interest out in our listening audience. In fact, we've already got a caller. We're going to ask our caller to hold on and bear with us as we go through the break. We are going to have to take a break now, if you don't mind, but I'm encouraging everybody to come back and join us for what's turning out already to be a fascinating conversation with Valerie Granoff. Again, Dr. Kaelin Silverberg, Dr. Thomas Vaughn with Texas Fertility. This is Beyond the Birds and Bees, and our call-in number, if you'd like to call in, is 390-1370. And just to tell you a little bit about what we're going to talk about when we come back, we're going to ask Val about common issues that she sees in our patients, male issues, female issues. And then we're going to end up with, I'm going to ask you a few questions about coping with the holidays, because the holidays are coming up, and I think you're going to be able to give our patients and our listeners some skills as far as how you cope with these issues.
It's a great time of year to talk about that.
So come on back after the break, and we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Thomas Vaughn with my partner, Dr. Kaelin Silverberg, on Beyond the Birds and the Bees, Talk Radio 1370 AM, and we have a special guest today, Valerie Granoff, who is a psychologist that works with a lot of our patients that have problems with the stress created by our problem that we deal with, infertility or difficulty in conceiving. We're really glad to have you, Val.
Thanks for
being here.
My pleasure.
And we have we're live, so you can call in at 390-1370, and actually we have a caller on line one. I believe it is Katie.
Yes.
It's Katie. Are you there? Good. Thanks.
Hi, Katie.
What question? Hi. What kind of question do you have?
Well, I hope I'm not changing the topic on you too much. I actually, my husband and I have been trying for 3 years or a little bit more to get pregnant, and so have definitely experienced kind of the emotional roller coaster and hopes and disappointments and all that that goes along with it. But kind of more specifically, I had a laparoscopy in July, and they did find mild endometriosis, and so we're in that kind of one-year window of, you know, hoping that we can get pregnant during this time. And since the surgery, any ovulation test that I have done, which is three different brands now, has said that I am not ovulating. I am going to see my doctor this week, but wondered if you might be able to help me with, is it possible to be ovulating and the tests aren't reading it, or maybe with the types of questions that I should be asking my doctor to kind of move forward and have a hope of making something happen.
You have several really, really good questions. And to start with the first one that you mentioned, and that is, could you be ovulating with the kit being negative? And yes, you could be, particularly if you drink a lot of water right before you test. However, we kind of look at these tests as if they're a little bit guilty till proven innocent, if you will. In other words, we feel that we should prove to you that you're really ovulating if your kit's been negative. So you should have further evaluation with that, and you may need medication to help you ovulate.
Okay.
Katie, how often are your cycles? I mean, how long is your typical cycle length?
Well, it's been kind of longer since the surgery, it seems like, closer to like 8 to 10 days of some sort of spotting or bleeding on the actual cycle. But,
but I never
know when to count as the first day of the whole cycle.
Right, but and that's a common...
Anywhere from like 25 to 30 days, probably.
Is that 25 to 30 days counting the 8 days of bleeding or not counting the 8 days?
Counting that.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's a tough one because a lot of patients do have spotting, and spotting in and of itself can be an issue because it indicates one of two basic categories of problems. Either A, there's a hormonal issue, which, as Dr. Vaughn alluded to, may be indicative of the fact that you may not be ovulating regularly, or B, there could be something in your uterine cavity like a polyp or a little fibroid tumor or something like that that can cause you to spot before your period also. But classically, we tell patients that the first day of heavy flow is really the first day of their cycle. So we call that cycle day one. And then your cycle should be anywhere from, you know, 26 to 32 or so days in length. So the first day of heavy bleeding to the first day of bleeding again should be about 26 to 32 days.
Okay.
Okay. Also, the other issue I wanted to address is this one-year window thing, because this is in the on the internet, and there's no magic about 1 year after treatment of endometriosis. We know that endometriosis is not a curable condition. It will go away after menopause, usually, but it's not curable otherwise. So it's unfortunately going to come back. How fast it comes back depends upon a lot of things. Depends on how old you are. Depends on the stage of disease that you had. If you just had mild disease, that would be stage two. And there's about a 50% recurrence rate in 4 years. And so once you're diagnosed with endometriosis, it's kind of like a race. And the race has started. And so it's a race between you trying to get pregnant or your disease coming back. And so I would encourage you not to wait a year before you seek help, but rather if you and your husband try and have intercourse well-timed, mid-cycle, for about 3 to 4 months, if you're not pregnant by that time, you really should go see somebody.
Okay. And are there any specific questions? I mean, I'm seeing the doctor that we're seeing is an OB with not a fertility specialist, but an interest in fertility who works a lot with that. So when I see him this week, are there any particular questions that I should be asking about next steps?
I think there are several questions. One, do you mind telling us how old you are?
No, sure. I'm 30.
30. Okay.
Great.
That's great. Actually, age is very important in the probability of being able to conceive. So it's real. It's good to be 30. And not 40, for instance. But anyway, you need to make sure other factors are okay. Also, be sure that the semen analysis has been normal.
We did that, and it was just under normal. So they said it shouldn't rule us out, but it was on the low end of things.
You know, and I think that's fairly accurate. It doesn't really rule you out, but there may be some things you can do to help, like be assisted, like intrauterine insemination procedures like that. Also, were the fallopian tubes open? Did you do a hysterosalpingogram and HSG?
Yes, all of that looks normal.
Okay. Yes. So you might actually be considered someone with a little bit of an ovulatory dysfunction, maybe a little bit of a low sperm count, and you may be moving toward medication to help you ovulate better, and possibly helping your husband's sperm with intrauterine insemination.
And the endometriosis on top of that. So, you know, really, of all the factors that we look at, you've got three of them that are not classically normal. And so, I mean, I think that it would be time to turn up the volume a little bit and start to get a little bit more aggressive. And I would just hate to have you follow some advice and say, okay, well, we're just going to try for another year. We're going to continue to not have positive LH surges. We're not going to know exactly when we ovulate or whether we do or whether we don't. The husband's sperm count's a little bit low, maybe a little bit lower. In fact, if you had a low sperm count, we don't know if we got him on a good day and he's really got really low sperm and he just happened to do okay that day, or if we happened to get him on a bad day and maybe his sperm counts are really good and he just didn't, you know, he was just off a little bit that day. So you may want to consider repeating the sperm count also. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, Katie, also, women who have mild endometriosis and are treated clearly have an increased chance of getting pregnant. The studies are pretty clear on that. However, just like what Dr. Silverberg said, we tend to move our patients along within 3 to 4 months of having been treated for endometriosis, kind of keep them moving, because the majority of those that do get pregnant in that first year actually get pregnant pretty quickly.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, we look at it a different way too, in that we would rather be a little more aggressive and you get pregnant faster and rather than go the other way, and we took longer, and then you say, you know, I'm 31 now, and it's time to move on, and now I really need to see Val.
And I was just going to say, Katie, the one piece of this that I would contribute is that a lot of the couples that I see, especially the women, will say if they had only been a little more aggressive, they might not have suffered so long emotionally. And so there's that piece of, you know, every day that you go through this and every month and that emotional roller coaster you're talking about is, you know, I think the more aggressive and the faster you can get to the result, the more you can move on with your life and your quality of life improves.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, thank you very much. That's a lot of good information.
Well, thank you so much for the call. We sure appreciate it. And again, Beyond the Birds and Bees, our calling number is 390-1370. Val, I want to get back to you, and I want to ask you a few questions here. Tell us, really, what are the common issues that you see when couples come to see you? Talk first about female issues, and then let's talk about guys. I mean, do guys even, you know, are they even willing to open up and talk?
You know, they are, and I'd say that the majority of patients that I see that pursue treatment and that continue in treatment are the females. And oftentimes the couple will come, they'll start as the initial session, and the husband is more of the supportive member of the couple, although, you know, everything that I say I generalize and certainly doesn't apply to everybody. But for the most part, it makes sense that the female patient is going to have the most difficult time. The procedures are most invasive for her. The maternal instinct tends to be emotionally a bit stronger. Not for everyone. There are a lot of dads out there that feel very strongly about this. But you're asking me kind of across the board. You know, women tend to feel very ready. If you know you want to have a baby, you knew it a long time ago, and you probably spent a lot of time trying to prevent it in your earlier years. And by the time you're ready, you are ready. And when it's not happening, it's in a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of self feelings of worthlessness and your body not cooperating. And then there's a compounded, you know, a whole other level of difficulty just functioning in daily life, the jealousy of your friends and your social network, having difficulty finding anything more meaningful to talk about, but not wanting to talk about this with anyone. And, you know, life kind of feeling like it's put on hold and that there's not a whole lot of joy in anything. And I'd say that, you know, women tend to ruminate more. They tend to obsess more about this naturally. And they're the ones making the phone calls and making the calendar and showing up for the doctor's office at the doctor's office and waiting for the phone calls from their nurses and kind of sitting on pins and needles. And the men, you know, have a little different experience. Their primary focus in therapy when we talk and their primary stress is wanting their wives to feel better and wanting them not to hurt. And so they have less of a sense of failure and more of a sense of failure at being the best supportive husband that they can be because they can't fix this for their wives.
Well, I tell you, everything you said is just everything I've heard my whole life. I mean, it is so true. First, women go from realizing that the chance of getting pregnant each month may be only 20-25% to having been told by mom and dad, I told my daughters the same, 125%.
Exactly.
Don't even think about guys.
That's
so they kind of go from that to going, I can't believe this. And then they're also pushed so much with intercourse for fertility that almost it becomes a chore.
Right.
And they never thought that they would be thinking, do I have to have sex again? I mean, 180 from what you think when you're 20 years old. So all of those things are important. I think it's really good that the husbands will show up to see you.
Oh, they do. And, you know, a lot of couples say it really brings them closer. Their husbands are, you know, anything that they're asked, they don't intuitively always know the right thing to do or how to help or what they're supposed to be doing. They're generally, if we look at a more traditional couple, they're working. They're, you know, leaving for work every day. This is not on top of their mind. It's probably an undercurrent, but it's not the primary focus. And they're... you know, they're worried and they're probably the first of the couple, of the partnership to say, you know what, I'm really okay if we don't continue. I'm really okay if we take a break. And usually it's the women that are saying, you know, the faster we get through this, the faster I have a result, the faster I'll be happy.
Well, part of that may also be the guys saying that because they can't fix it.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times that's so stressful for the guy that he can't fix it. So sometimes he just doesn't even want to talk about it because
right.
he can't fix it. What he doesn't realize is that those women process by talking.
Yes.
And yet, they're really not asking the guys to fix it.
Exactly.
It's almost
it's back to that. Be a good listener.
Yeah,
right.
Be a good listener.
And be nurturing and hold my hand.
And what support is demonstrated, that's great support demonstrated with the guys being there. We like, and I think Kaylin would back me up on this, we like it when the guys come in, at least for the first visit, to talk to us about what we do medically.
Yeah.
You can get such a feel, at least in our practice, you can get such a feel for the couple based on whether they show up, whether they don't show up, whether the guy's there, whether they're not there, how they look at each other when they're talking. You know, is the woman telling the story and the guy's looking down, or is the guy busy, you know, texting on his cell phone and not paying attention, or, you know, vice versa, or, you know, does he kind of snap at her when she makes a statement, or do they want to be very forthcoming? You know, is there, you know, sometimes a couple will start to talk, one member of the couple will start to talk and the other person will tap them and say, they don't need to know that. They don't need to know that, you know, and it's not, that's not what we're trying to get at. I mean, right. I joke with our patients and say, look, it's not keep away. You know, don't keep the information away. I mean, we need to share and we need to talk about what the situation is, what issues are really concerning to you, so we can really get to the bottom of the matter and get this fixed.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I will flip it and say, you asked me about, you know, what are some of the differences with men? Now, if a man is the primary issue of the couple having fertility problems, if it's a male factor, they definitely will go through a very similar kind of sense of, you know, worthlessness or feeling of inadequacy if this is a sperm issue. And so, you know, I think there are plenty of men out there who can identify their sense of letting down their wife or letting down
sure.
their family. And remember, this is not just about the couple. This is so far reaching to grandparents and to family members who are hoping to also have these babies in the family.
Yeah.
So there's even a greater sense of pressure and responsibility that this is, you know, when I say this is far reaching, a lot of the work I do is not just talking about, you know, how the cycle is going this month and what the ups and downs were in that particular week, but also, you know, how's it affecting their work? How's it affecting their friendships? How is it affecting their family members? What should they say? What should they not say? You know, and it's a full-time job for...
Absolutely. You know, diabetes, high blood pressure, things like that. I mean, they're individual. I mean, to put it in terms of sports, you know, they're individual sports. Mm-hmm. Because if you have diabetes, it's like you're playing tennis. You know, you're the one who's affected, or you're playing golf. You're the one who's affected. You're the one who has the disease. And granted, it affects people around you, but you're really the one who has it. With infertility, it's so different because it's really a couple's. It's a team sport.
Yes.
And, you know, we joke with our patients and say, look, infertility is a team sport. It's us against the disease. So it's not you against your husband or your husband against you to say it's your fault that you had, you know, such and such when you were younger, or it's your fault that you've got a low sperm count, or it's your fault that you have endometriosis. So we try and really stay away from that whole blame game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you get people to not focus on the blame game?
You know, it's funny. I don't find anyone blaming. Well, when you talk about the blame game, the first thing that comes to mind is they blame themselves first. That's usually, you know, what did I do? How did I not take care of myself? How did I wait so long? Then the next place they're blaming is, why didn't anyone tell me? You know, mm-hmm. where was the information? Mm-hmm. Very easy to blame the earlier doctors, usually by the time they get to the specialist. Why did my last doctor know? Or why did I stay so long?
Do you see a lot of that?
You know, it is pretty prevalent. You know, I can really tell the doctors, the OBGYNs in the description of how couples will talk about their doctors on, you know, there are fewer doctors who really understand the timing, you know, that you were just talking to Katie about in terms of, you know, whether you wait a year, whether you wait 6 months, how many miscarriages should you have before your doctor says, I really want you to do something more aggressive or more specialized. It's real clear when they come in. And I think the couples that are most disappointed are from, you know, the doctors that really are just not as informed and up to date. So that is a place of blame. I think there's a whole spiritual element of, where do you put God in all of this? Couples talk, especially women, talk a lot about, you know, how let down they are and what are they supposed to feel. And they don't feel like going to church because why is this bad thing happening to them? And then they feel like horrible people that they, you know, are having questions about their own faith. And so, you know, it's such a complex, complicated emotional experience to go through that, you know, as you can see, all the, you know, we're going from one tangent to the next of all the different ways that a couple is impacted.
Well, but, you know, some of them it'll shake their religion.
Absolutely.
I'm doing all the right things, kind of like God's not fair. Well, God's fair, it's life's not fair. I mean, they have to work through all of that, but it does shake their religion.
And what did I do to be punished for this?
And particularly if they did something that they maybe wish they hadn't done, whether it was have a termination or get an infection in college or something like
right.
that. And we're all about moving ahead.
Absolutely.
We're all about, we can deal with this, let's get it done and move on.
Well, I think, you know, as in our human nature, and back to your point about being productive individuals who make things happen, we're always looking for answers.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the unknown, which is what a lot of this
right.
is too hard for us to, we got to put it in a box, we got to label it, and we got to feel in control of it. And if we don't feel that way, then we feel anxious and depressed and helpless. And
it's amazing how they will do that, even if they've been through a procedure, and they'll say, what did I do wrong? And I'm going, it's not like you didn't eat enough broccoli. It's just sometimes things don't work.
Yeah,
I just have a hard time with the whole God's will thing, though, because I'll have patients who'll come in and they say, you know what, I've been trying for 2 years on my own. We've tried two inseminations. It hasn't worked. It's just God's will. I'm not meant to have children. And I just have a real hard time with that. It's like, you know, there's so many things that are available to do. It's like saying, well, you know what? It's God's will. I got breast cancer. I shouldn't have treatment. Right. Or it's God's will. I was in a car wreck and now I'm bleeding to death in the emergency room. Nobody should stop my bleeding. It just doesn't.
And the other, the 180 of that, of the fatalistic thing, is that, okay, if it's God's will, just walk across MOPAC. I don't think so. Right. I mean, I think he probably wants us to help us do things that are ethical and moral,
right,
and help ourselves and help our community get better.
Right. So there's that, you know, always reaching for, if I can't explain it tangibly and the doctors don't have all the answers, then I've got to go to, I guess I got to go to God.
Because, sure. That's the box.
You know, that's the box. And, you know, I don't do religious counseling. I do, you know, explain that there are certainly many, you know, to go to your religious leader and talk, mm-hmm, or your pastor and talk, your rabbi, talk to somebody who can guide you. But my experience is in talking with a number of religious leaders over the years that they all say the same thing. This is random. This is nature.
Right.
And what we want for you is what makes you happy and to have family. And that's it. It's as simple as that.
Well, I hate to cut you off here for a minute, but we are up against another break. And so we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to ask you all about coping with the holidays because, you know, we got past Halloween, which is a big one. But unfortunately, we've got Thanksgiving coming up and we've got Christmas coming up. Big family holidays, big get-togethers, lots of kids. And the question is, how do our couples deal with that? So again, Dr. Kalen Silverberg, Dr. Thomas Vaughn, Val Granoff, Texas Fertility Center, Beyond the Birds and Bees. Come back and join us after the break, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Talk 1370, the right choice for we. Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's about a quarter till one. We've only got 15 minutes left to talk to Val. And Val, I got to tell you, I am so relaxed now. I mean, I'm usually so, I'm a little hyper in general, but oh my God, sitting here talking to you for 45 minutes, I feel like my blood pressure's falling in half.
You didn't even get a couch to lay on, did you?
No, I'm sitting up straight, but this is great.
Wait till you see Val's bill for this.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, you can just go ahead and send it right on. It'd be worthwhile. But anyway, Kalen Silverberg, Thomas Vaughn, Texas Fertility Center, we're back on Beyond the Birds and Bees with Val Granoff. And Val, what we really wanted to talk about, or what I wanted to get to before we end today, is the holidays. Because, as you know, the holidays are coming up. We got Thanksgiving, we got Christmas. We have an article that's going to come up in our new, patient newsletter that's going to come out in the next couple of days about some tips. But how do you counsel couples about the holidays?
Well, this is the, you know, when you asked me to be on the show, that was actually the first thing that came to mind, was it was real timely because the holidays are definitely a high point and a high stress point, a high point of depression, which, you know, in the general population, it's can be a tough time anyway with a lot going on. But especially, you know, what I think about and what couples often talk about is the marker of time. And there's something about the end of a year and the beginning of a new year, not just Thanksgiving, Christmas, but also the new year. The fact that January 1st marks another year of going through this. And couples, by, you know, kind of across the board, would love to announce a pregnancy at the holidays with their family around.
Well, you know, Val, also it seems to me not only are the holidays a difficult time for families, maybe families that have lost loved ones.
Right.
But it seems like Christmas is all about kids.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that, and the commercials and everything on television, it's like rubbing salt in the wound.
That's absolutely right. And so there are a lot of things we talk about in terms of the very first thing, I guess, at a high level is to just give couples permission, and women especially, permission to say what they need. If they want to create a different tradition this time of year, if they don't want to be with family this year, if they want to keep it small, if they want to go to across the world and be away, you know, till the holidays pass, you know, there's no right way to do this. What's right is how do you get through this and manage so that you can stay as balanced and able to keep maintaining and pushing through your treatment. And the healthier you can stay and the less stress you're under, you know, the better. So, you know, the holidays are often, there's often pressure to do for others. And this year, what I would say to you is do for yourself. You've been through enough. This is your opportunity to, you know, not worry about social norms. You'll get, this is temporary. You'll get back to the holidays the way you used to experience them. And if you don't want to be around a lot of people, then you don't. Or if you just want to be around selective people. Another, you know, there are some things Kalen and I were talking about during the break about, you know, some kind of tips that we all talk about often. You know, use use online gift cards instead of going to the malls and the shopping stores with all the kids, and turn the TV off and not have to listen to all the commercials, and you know, come up with creative ways to give without having to be surrounded by all the kids. But if you are going to be around family, if you do choose, there are also things you can do to help manage your time there so that you can take the breaks that you need and not be surrounded and overwhelmed by the activities that you may not want to be part of. And what I mean by that is, for instance, if you're at a family gathering and you and your husband have a conversation, or you and your partner have a conversation before the gathering, you come up with code words that are there's no judgment about saying, I've been here for 2 hours, I need a break. What's the code word going to be that she's going to say to him, I got to get out of here, or, you know, come with me, I need to take an hour break? Or, you know, if you suspect that a sister-in-law is going to announce a pregnancy, and that happens all the time. This comes up where people save their announcements till the holidays when the family's around. If you suspect that might happen, ask your husband or partner to call their family and say, just by the way, there's a hypersensitivity for us right now. If there's anything that's going to be happening, can you let us know in advance, or can you just do it before we get there? You know, they're just the communication and the honesty in preparation and being proactive will keep you from being caught off guard and feeling as overwhelmed when you get there, just to name a few.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of interesting, too, because what you brought up is something that's real important. We talked earlier about what to say to couples who are having trouble getting pregnant. It's almost like both groups need a little talking to, so to speak, or
exactly. Are
listening, so that, because no one knows what to say. Even in the family situation, you want to say something, you invariably will say the wrong thing.
Right.
And there's no winners.
And it's just not intentional. I mean, it's just
not,
people don't think.
Clearly not malicious.
And they're trying to be helpful and supportive. And you know, there's a dichotomy, because you don't want to be left out. You don't want to be thought of as different, but you don't want to know about it. So it's sort of, you know, I often tell couples, you know, your family and friends are in a little bit of a lose-lose situation. If they say too much, you know, it might be too much. If they don't say anything at all, you feel left out. So it really is one more job for the couple going through infertility, is to figure out the right, the right feedback to give their family ahead of time, so that, you know, maybe this year they're feeling better than they were. It wasn't such a bad year. They're not where they want to be, but they're doing okay. So they can be, you know, more a part of the family gathering. You know, this year might be a more difficult year than the last one was. And so, you know, I often, part of the benefit of coming back to therapy week by week or every few weeks is really not having to repeat things that aren't working the weeks before. So if you get bad news 3 weeks ago and Christmas happens to be right around the corner, you might feel differently than you thought you would in June when you were looking at Christmas. So it's just, you know, it's like, go easy on yourself and really evaluate. Wake up every morning and say, what do I need today? And what's coming up next week? And let's get through Thanksgiving before we try to figure out how we're going to feel about Christmas.
Yeah, this is another thing we talk to our patients about, too. And I know that you are a big believer in this as well. You know, there are different ways of dealing with problems. One way is to be passive. Another way is to be active.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we tell our couples all the time that, you know, it's fine and dandy to tell your family and friends when they say, so what's going on with you with kids? And the answer is, we're working on it. You know, you empower patients to take control of their situation. You know, sitting back at home and just trying, you know, you have sex well-timed every month over and over and over again, that's not taking control of the situation. But going out, seeking help, getting books, reading about it, getting on the internet, finding out what can be done, what kind of testing can be done, going to see a specialist, all those things are really empowering our couples and our patients to take control of their own lives.
And control is the very thing that will minimize the feeling of helplessness, depression, and anxiety. Because with such a feeling of loss of control going through this whole process, there's so many things that are out of their control. Anything, and we talk about that a lot. That is a lot of what the therapy is about, is not only the supportive listening and the cathartic ability to talk about your feelings, but it's also about, what's your plan going to be? But, you know, when I do my groups with women, especially, we talk about, between now and the next time we get together, what's everyone committing to do? Is it a massage?
Sure.
Is it a conversation with someone? Is it, you know, doing some research? Is it asking questions? It takes a lot of courage to keep this up. It's like, I call it like a marathon that hasn't ended yet. You know, it's an endurance test. And it's a day by day, you know, how do you find what are the things you can control in your life? Not just with the fertility aspect of life, but in every other, you know, your life goes on. And the number one regret that people say they have after they're successful is that they wasted a lot of time putting life on hold, being passive, and not having any quality of life. And 3 to 5 years can go by. And, you know, if they had to do it over again, they now know they could have still achieved the same result, but kept their quality of life to some degree, you know, at a better level. There's no happy place when you want this and it's not happening until you get that baby. But there are better days than others, and we are responsible for, on the days that we can, find the energy to push forward, to do something that's, you know, that you can check off your list and say, I did today and feel good about.
Sure. And the best news that we tell our patients is that, you know, there's the data show very clearly that 80 to 88%, depending upon which studies you read, of patients who walk in the door of a fertility specialist, a real fertility specialist, with infertility, walk out with a baby.
And I would say, from my perspective, I'm not keeping track of statistics, but after all these years of doing this, I'd say I know very few couples who haven't had some resolution to having their family. One way or the other, I just can't even count on one hand, unless they've decided to stop trying, that it hasn't worked out for them. So I'm in total agreement with that's what I see as well.
Well, thank you so much for, I mean, not only for being here today, but for everything that you do with our couples and our patients. It's remarkable.
It's such a rewarding opportunity to get to do this specialty.
You know, one of the other things I was, perfect personality. Aww. She's going to send you a bill. No, but the other thing about coming back for another session, it sort of recharges the couple too.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's beneficial.
We ask
patients, when they've done a few tests, come back and let's put it together now. Let's make a plan. The couples that we see a lot of times don't have structure in how they're moving forward. And this allows us to recharge them to say, now here's what we need to do next. So they do have control.
And
I think that's great advice.
And that's a lot of what I tell. They come in to see me and they're kind of all over the place. And I'll say, okay, what are the questions? Make a list. It's okay to call your doctor. It's okay to call your nurse. You know, once you have this information, you'll have a plan, and it's the coaching. And I think you're right. As a team, it just works really well. And I will say, because we didn't talk about this earlier, you know, when you were introducing me, that I am one of those statistics. And you know, Dr. Silverberg and Dr. Vaughn know I met them many, many, many years ago when I was fortunate enough to see them as a patient. And I now have an almost 13-year-old son as a result of their wonderful
work. It's really too bad we're late. We'd ask you to repeat that about 10 times.
but that's what gives you just an extra special perspective.
Absolutely.
Also.
Absolutely. I've been
because
on that roller coaster
real
before.
Insight.
Yeah, but not only are you so qualified to see patients because of your abilities and your personality, but your personal experience.
Absolutely. Yep.
You can say, I've walked in your shoes.
I have walked in your shoes. And and I remember crying on the table saying, it's never, never, never going to work. And Dr. Silverberg, patiently and supportively laughing, saying, are you kidding me? We're going to get there.
Well,
and here we are.
I just know you're relentless anyway. And so you know, you're never going to give up. And it was fabulous. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It really was a pleasure.
Thanks. The insight is just invaluable.
Thank you.
I know that our listeners will be very appreciative. Well, this is going to end the hour for us for Beyond the Birds and the Bees. Dr. Kaylin Silverberg and I'm Dr. Thomas Vaughn. From the Texas Fertility Center, our website's www.txfertility.com. Our special guest, Valerie Granoff, thanks again for being here. And next week, at this time, at noon on Saturday, Dr. Rinku Mehta will be hosting the show. We'll see you on the radio next week.
Okay.